This recording is labeled explicit, but your audience is only. Parental discretion is advised.
Bitch alert! Bitch alert! Bitch alert! Attention, all you bitches! Listen up! Dr. Moe is on the air!
The other day when I came home, I was followed by a police officer who asked to check my credentials because he didn't believe that I lived where I lived. But I don't feel so bad because I make more money than he does and mine is bigger than his.
And everywhere I go, there's always something to remind me of another place and time. Where love that traveled far had found me.
This is the Rude Guy checking in from Maui, and this is the show with something to offend everybody.
Yo, this is Cardinal Dave from For Show. And if you want to be in the motherfucking zone, listen to Dr. Mo in the danger zone right here on Podomatic. Strike a pose, bitch!
Hello, bitches. This is Dr. Mo. Welcome to the danger zone.
We don't get fooled again. Don't get fooled again. No, no!
Okay, let's talk about the 2008 political slate. I mean, obviously, the big news, we got a black guy running for president. We've got Barack Obama, very popular, charismatic, you know, famous. He's, you know, Hollywood is loving him. We've got Hillary Clinton, who was president while Bill Clinton was in the White House, but she was just behind the scenes, and now she's actually coming out for her real show to be president. Do we want another 8 years of Clinton in the White House? Sure, black people might be siding with her. What are we doing in terms of voting? Who do we like? Who do you like?
Who do I like? Well, right now, you know, I'm a Democrat, so I'm a registered Democrat. So with me, it's going to be between Clinton and Barack. And right now, I still don't know. I'm still filling things out, listening to the, you know, to the speeches and all that stuff.
What do you think about Barack Obama? He's the first black president. Will he get shot within his first 90 days? You know you heard that shit. You are black. Exactly. You know you heard it. You heard that shit from your grandmother.
Like they said,
okay?
Like they said, hire a Mexican as a vice president, and then you know the black person won't get shot.
Oh, hell no. It's my only problem with Bill Richardson, who's the governor of New Mexico. He's definitely a Mexican. What I'm afraid of, okay, but let's look at the candidates. What I'm afraid of, not all of them, but just Bill Richardson, New Mexico. What I'm afraid of, if he becomes president, is that he's going to have a big quinceria and a fucking piñata party and put a turnstile at the fucking border and call all his cousins from Mexico. I'm afraid of that, of course, and so are all white people. If you put a black person in there, I'm sure white people are worried that the black president is going to say, all right, now I'm in charge, let's have some reparations, and then they're going to kill his ass. And, of course, we're all afraid.
Well, see, I think, you know, Barack Obama can get away with it because there are a lot of blacks that think he hasn't gone through the black, you know, quote-unquote struggles that most black Americans have gone through. You know,
his
he
mother's
went to Harvard.
Wife.
Right, he went to Harvard, and they said, black people turned around and said, well, he called himself Barry, you know, while he was in college, you know, and so he didn't even use his given name, Barack, you know, he used Barry, you know, and just, I think a lot of white people see that a lot of African Americans aren't agreeing with Obama for those reasons, and I think he could get into the presidency more so than somebody like a Reverend Al Sharpton or a Jesse Jackson.
Because they're too black.
Right, right.
But he's not black enough, is it?
Exactly, exactly. And that's why some of the people, but, you know, it's weird. You know, they don't think Barack Obama is black enough, but they think because of President Clinton, he's blacker than Barack is, so we'll vote for Clinton, you know? So instead of voting for the best person, you know, it's strange. America, you know, could be a strange place sometimes when it comes to things.
So
like
who
that.
Do you think, what do you think about John Edwards? Is he gay?
You always got to bring up the gay question.
Well,
right?
Of course, I got to speak to my gay audience.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't think he is. You know, from what I've seen on him on the news and stuff, I don't think he is. You know, now other people that we've spoken about, you know, we talked about on our pre-program shows. You know, you could tell right away. But John Edwards, I don't see anything.
What's the sign that somebody's gay? When you see somebody, how do you know they're gay?
You know, they say, you know, they say people have gaydar. You know, I work at a job that's predominantly gay. You know, I'm putting at least 80% of the males that work at American Airlines are gay.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
No. I'm just saying that I work at a gay.
My grandfather was gay, I think, maybe. I don't know. Perhaps.
Right.
It's okay, yeah, I'm sure.
Right. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying that I work at a job that is dominated by gays and women.
So you got good gaydar. Plus you work on an airplane and they have radar. So gays and radar equals gaydar. Your gaydar is probably very good.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll tell you too. They'll, you know, the guys will turn around and tell you, you know, that, you know, that dude's gay, but he probably doesn't know it yet. You know,
damn.
You joke around like that all the time. You know, you hear the guys joking around all the time.
But they probably know it, but they're hiding it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, exactly.
I mean, with all the, I mean, there's a gay television channel, for crying out loud. I mean, who wants to still be in the closet today? I guess it becomes a personal, people are still afraid of getting fired for being gay.
Well, that and then family disowning them. You know, a lot of gays that I've spoken to, you know, don't talk to their parents anymore because their parents don't accept them for who they are.
What,
you know?
What's your stand on gays in the closet?
It's your decision, you know. It's your decision that, you know, but don't turn around and, you know, like we had discussed before, you turn around and you get married and you have kids and you're raising a family and then all of a sudden you decide that you're going to come out the closet knowing the whole time that you had some inkling that you were gay, but then in the meantime you ruined a whole family situation because you decided to try to keep it to yourself, you know, and let the situation get progressively worse by having kids and continuing on with the marriage and stuff like
that's,
that.
That's
so
pretty horrible.
I think that's when it kind of gets bad, you know, when it kind of gets bad and stuff like that. And I have heard stories, you know, about that happening. And you see stories like that on TV too, as well, where the guy's married and says, "Oh, all of a sudden, I decided I'm gay," and you know, all of a sudden I break it to my wife and kids and stuff, and now you got a whole another set of problems that you just started because of that situation. So
now, you know, there's a website called IraqForSale.org where you can view a video. It's a movie you can buy, but there are soldiers who have left the military because you know, the government is so heavily blasting the military with clauses that require them to use the services of contractors, so that these contractors are making loads of money. There's this one story about in Iraq, they have to, you know, a bag of laundry cannot be done. You can't do your own laundry. You have to take it to a contractor, for a Halliburton type contractor, and they charge you $100 per laundry bag to do the laundry. They have contractors doing all kinds of jobs, making six figures in Iraq, former military, doing the jobs that soldiers are supposed to be doing. And now I don't know if that's because they want to free up the soldiers to actually do some fighting, but then you have some soldiers who are trained to do certain jobs, like, you know, maybe laundry and things like that. And instead of doing those jobs, they're being sent to the front line, and those jobs are being taken by contractors. I mean, that's bad.
Yeah, that sounds like a desperation tactic to me by Bush and those guys, you know, because they turn around and call up more troops, you know, and America's going to be really pissed. You know, we're pissed off right now.
We're pissed off, all right.
Yeah, to get those, that we got those 21,000, 22,000 call up, you know, just recently, you know, to help Bush with this Iraq mess that he got us into. But, you know, if they're turning around and taking people that are supposed to be cooks and stuff for the military and now making them go on the front line and stuff, and now hiring contractors, it sounds almost like a desperation.
Isn't it? That's kind of bullshit. Yeah. I mean, it's a money-making move. Now, when you think about this, General Petraeus, who is the commander of the U.S. forces in Iraq and probably beyond that, but General Petraeus, when he was a kid, they used to call him Peaches, and that's probably why he became the top guy in the military. You really can't fuck with him now.
You probably beat your ass.
Call me Peaches, and I will eradicate everybody you ever knew, bitch. You know what I'm saying? I'm the big dick now.
Don't call me Francis.
Do not call me Francis. That's right, suckers. I got the big guns. So he's over there, and you know what he said? He said that it's going to take decades to quell the conflict in Iraq.
Oh yeah. I believe that. I firmly believe that. I think it's just such a mess right now, and you're probably getting daily or shit by the hour in Iraq that people are turning around and becoming insurgents, you know, because of this mess that, you know,
it becomes a new career.
It is. It's just gotten so out of hand.
There's absolutely no way to win this. There are more terrorists being trained and born and bred than there are American soldiers.
Right. They just came out with that announcement that Al-Qaeda now is built up and now there's a possible threat against the U.S.
They're more powerful than the president said that they're more powerful now than they've ever been.
See, you know, and I thought the president was supposed to stop that.
Well, he was lying. And I think that's the thing here. He was lying to us. And I cannot believe that he has not been fired.
Right, exactly.
How come you can't fire? This is America. Bring Donald Trump in and have him fire his ass. George, you're fired. Get him out of here.
It's amazing. It's just amazing the things this administration keeps doing. He's going to go down in history probably as the worst president.
Worse than Nixon.
Ever. Yeah, worse ever.
Worse than Nixon. There are rumors that George Bush was gay, that in college he had to suck dick a couple times for some rituals. And apparently he liked it. And then I think he got reformed at some point. He had to go to church. They made him go to church, find Jesus, and get married. He married Laura right after that. So
you get ready in about 2 hours. You're probably going to have the FBI and shit knocking on your
come
door.
Come on, FBI. Are you kidding me?
We just heard.
I got a guy
just
watching
heard.
Me from outside right now, motherfucker. Come on, FBI guys.
We just heard you say Bush sucks dick.
The Bush is.
We just heard you say that.
He is.
You get a knock on your door.
He's sucking your Dr. Mo's dick right now. Dr. Mo said it. And bring me over there, and I will get him to come out of his gayness if you want me to help you out.
Whatever.
I need to help the country here. Now, we talked about this website from United Airlines called Untied.com. And this is a website that really breaks down how fucked up United Airlines is and all of the horror stories that people run into. And I talked about this, I think, in one of my last shows where there was a kid who was traveling alone and he got delayed and his flights got canceled. He got moved from one flight to another and he wanted to – and his mother was calling trying to find him out. And they wouldn't give her any information. And then the kid was like, I want to talk to my mother. Can you call her? And the black girl who was United Airlines person, was like, it's not in my job description to call your mother. Is this a black thing or is this like an airline thing?
I don't know. That sounded – well, it sounds more like an airline thing because I could – excuse me. I could hear agents saying that. You know, it's not my job description, especially when – you have a disgruntled employee because they're not getting paid or they're not getting their, you know, getting treated fairly by any company. You know, it doesn't have to be an airline. It could be anywhere.
Right, right.
You know, it's just not my job description. I don't have to go beyond the extra. And one of the things about the airline, I know at least with American, they ask you, you know, will you, if the time is right, go above and beyond? You know, you know, do you have it to where you can go above and beyond to help somebody out or to help the airline and stuff?
Wow.
To me, that sounds like, you know, this lady was going to have to do above and beyond what she needed to do. And she just turned around and just said, hey, You know, it's not in my job description, so I don't have to do it.
Now,
you
know? Maybe if it was a black kid, that the black girl might have been more helpful because, you know, I've seen where, you know, we tend to help each other out in some of these situations, but it was definitely a white kid, and perhaps maybe you think some racism might have played into that a little bit?
I don't know about that.
I'm not calling your mother, you white devil. And, that's probably right. Come on, you know you're
right. You know me personally, I would never do anything.
Of course
like that.
Not.
I treat everybody the same.
And that's a good thing.
You're the only guy in there that does that. To toot your horn, you know, there are people out there that will single out, you know, like that, you know, and it's
damn.
A shame that you single out like that.
Well, listen, all my listeners might not know you in this way, but I just want to put it out there. You are extremely famous in my book because you had O.J. Simpson on one of your flights when he was flying back to Los Angeles after he got the call that Nicole Simpson Brown was murdered. And he's written a book. And there have been some excerpts that have been leaked from O.J. Simpson's new book. And okay. I want to close with that. I want to share that with you. I was really excited to get this out there, but let's read this a little bit. This is from OJ's new book. He says, "I'm going to tell you a story you've never heard before because no one knows this story the way I know it. It takes place on the night June 12, 1994, and it concerns and okay, if you look there, obviously it's not even, the grammar's not even right. But it takes place on the night of June 12, 1994, and it concerns the murder of my ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson. And did I call her Nicole Simpson Brown? I guess, well,
Nicole. No, you said Brown Simpson.
Okay, Nicole Brown Simpson and her young friend, Ronald Goldman. So right away there, he says, and her young friend, Ronald Goldman, he's obviously upset that she might have gone with a guy who was younger than him, and she might have thought that he was older, he couldn't get it up or something, and that was, so you could see he's upset about that, her young friend.
Right.
Wow. Exactly. Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of, you're right, that kind of does.
Think about it.
Yeah, kind of telltale sign.
It does. You know? And so he says,
you know, why doesn't it just say friend?
Exactly.
You know,
just, because he was just her friend. Name, and you know? He goes, her young, instead of saying, and Ronald Goldman, he says, and her young friend. Her friend. He was fucking her. He was tapping that ass. He was flipping it upside down, rubbing it down, fucking, and you was
like BBD, baby.
Somebody else was tapping your white bitch, and she didn't think you were that fucking sexy anymore because you used to whoop her ass. So
right.
Then he says, I want you to forget everything you think you know about that night because I know the facts better than anyone. I know the players. I've seen the evidence. I've heard the theories. And, of course, I've read all the stories that I did it, but I don't know I did it, that I can no longer tell fact from fiction, that I wake up in the middle of the night consumed by guilt screaming. Well, the fact that he's mentioning that, I haven't heard anybody saying that. But he might be waking up in the middle of the night screaming. So he's writing this book, and everybody's going to buy this book because they want to know, you know, did he kill her? Is he going to say, is there any new evidence? Now, he's obviously not going to incriminate himself.
Right.
So it would be stupid to think that you could buy this book and find out whether O.J. did it or not. But you certainly want to take a look inside one of America's greatest football players, O.J. Simpson, the Juice. He's still a superstar in my mind in a lot of ways. You know, there are a lot of black guys killing white girls. That happens. But that didn't happen during his football career. So
right.
His football career, you can't take that away. He is still one of the greatest American football players ever. So in his book about the murder, he says, I looked over at Goldman and I was fuming. I guess he was in the house then at that point. He says, I guess he thought I was going to hit him because he got into his little karate stance. No, right there, he's insulting him, right? He got into his little karate stance. What you doing, karate, motherfucker? I could whoop
you. Do you
your
know
ass.
Who you're fucking with? You fucking with OJ, motherfucker.
You fucking with the Juice. I'm about to knock your ass out with your little karate shit. Right? So right away, he's like, your little karate stance. I mean, this is great. This is great. Breaking this down is great. Then he says, He says to Ron Goldman, he says, what the fuck is that? You think you can take me with your karate shit? He started circling me, bobbing and weaving. And if I hadn't been so fucking angry, I would have laughed in his face. Charlie. I don't know who Charlie was. It's his daughter. Right? Who's Charlie?
I don't know who Charlie
was. Well, anyway, some Charlie was there. And, OJ, come on. It was Charlie again pleading. Nicole moaned, regaining consciousness. Regaining consciousness? Did he smack her or something?
There was I think if I remember correctly, there was a call a couple of nights before the murders where the police were called and OJ had hit Nicole or something like that, and the police had to come and take him out or something like that. I remember that.
Okay.
I remember that.
So
I think there was,
this
yeah.
is weird, though. When Nicole moaned, regaining consciousness, she might have been high, though. She might have been, like, really fucked up on some coke. From what I understand, you had Cato Kaelin, Ron Goldman, and Nicole over there smoking
and
some coke.
I can't remember who the other girl is, too. There's another girl that used to hang out with Nicole,
that could have
too.
Been Charlie.
Yeah.
That could have been Charlie. So Charlie, Nicole, Cato, and Ron Goldman are pulled up in OJ's house, and they are doing some cocaine like it's fucking Scarface Part 5. And so Nicole moaned, regaining consciousness. She stirred on the ground and opened her eyes and looked at me, but it didn't seem like anything was registering. Charlie walked over and planted himself, oh, that's a dude, in front of me, blocking my view. We're fucking done here, man. Let's go. So I guess Charlie was with OJ.
Okay,
Charlie wasn't doing coke. I noticed the knife in Charlie's hand, and in one deft move, I removed my right glove and snatched it up, meaning he grabbed a knife. We're not going anywhere, I said, turning to face Goldman. Goldman was still circling me, bobbing and weaving, but I didn't feel like laughing anymore. You think you're tough, motherfucker, I said. I could hear Charlie just behind me saying something, urging me to get the fuck out of there. And at one point, he even reached for me and tried to drag me away, but I shook him off hard and moved toward Goldman. He tried to grab OJ. OJ is the greatest football player ever. How the fuck are you going to try to grab him? Of course, he shook his ass off and like, nigga, brush your shit off my shoulder. Oh, I said the N-word. Sorry.
He was a big man. I told you.
He's huge.
He's a big man. He's a big man. And I'm no small potatoes. You know, like I said, I'm 6'1" and a half, about 205. You know, and OJ was considerably bigger than I was.
He's,
you know,
big.
So,
he was, if he was a football player, he had to dodge people that were 200, 300 pounds coming at him.
Right.
At speeds of like, you know, 10 miles an hour. And he goes to Goldman. He goes, okay, motherfucker, I said, show me how tough you are. Then something went horribly wrong. And I know what happened, but I can't tell you exactly how. I was...
Oh, excuse me.
Whoa, did you hear that? What's that about?
He
said, then something went horribly wrong, and I know what happened, but I can't tell you exactly how. So,
and so it ends right
no,
there.
No, he doesn't. He grabbed the knife. Now, remember, he took his glove off and grabbed the knife. So the fact that he took his glove off, he probably dropped it somewhere, and that was probably the glove that they picked up or something.
Right.
Because
right.
when you think about it, when I was looking at the tape, and even I have the picture of OJ trying to try the glove on during the trials, and that was on the show that we did, you and I, and he was trying the glove on, and there is a way, when you're trying a glove on, there is a way to position your hand inside the glove in a way that it would seem that the hand can't go through.
Right.
You know how to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you spread your hand inside. You spread it out so that it doesn't go in. So, you know, and he said he dropped the glove. He's saying it. So then something went horribly wrong, and I know what happened, but I can't tell you exactly how. I was still standing in Nicole's courtyard, of course, but for a few moments, I couldn't remember how I'd gotten there, when I'd arrive, or even why I was there. That Negro blacked out.
Either that or went into a rage.
He went, well, you know, when a Negro goes into a rage, you black out. You don't see nothing. You don't remember nothing.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you just go and then.
It is his dead body.
Whatever's done. Yeah, whatever's done. Then you're like, oh my God, what did
oh,
I just do?
Oh shit, I done fucked up now.
Right, exactly.
I got to get
That's
me.
What they call
somebody called Johnny Cochran. You know what I'm saying?
Why'd you call him Super Nigga?
That's right. Then it came back to me very slowly. The recital with little Sydney up on stage, dancing her little heart out. Me chipping balls into my neighbor's yard. Paula angry, not answering her phone. Charlie stopping by the house to tell me some more ugly shit about Nicole's behavior. Then what? The short, quick drive from Rockingham to the Bundy condo. And now, I was standing in Nicole's courtyard in the dark, listening to the loud, rhythmic, accelerated beating of my own heart. I put my left hand to my heart and my shirt felt strangely wet. I looked down at myself for several moments. I couldn't get my mind around what I was seeing. The whole front of me was covered in blood, but it didn't compute. Is this really blood, I wondered? And whose blood is it? Is it mine? Am I hurt? He blacked out.
Oh, my God.
Could you believe this?
It just sounds like it, you know, is he trying to get rid of this guilt that he has?
Well, he did mention that people think that he wakes up in the middle of the night consumed by guilt screaming. The fact that he's even mentioning that leads me to believe that it is very possible that that is something that he has experienced.
Yes, exactly.
Then he blacks out.
Still experiencing.
He's still experiencing on a daily basis. And then he has to write this book because, you know, his kids want to know. Imagine the babies.
And it's going to help him, too, though.
It's going to help him.
It's supposed to help him. It's therapeutic for him.
It is. But now, they can't really do anything to him anymore now, can they? I mean, the gold mines are out for his money now.
Did the judgment and stuff like that.
Right, so he can't be convicted of murder anymore.
But he's leaving enough in that book, just from what you just read, he's leaving enough in that book for us to make our own decision.
Yeah.
He's guilty.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, because to me, what you just read, that ain't saying not guilty at all. That is just saying guilty. That is saying guilty like a motherfucker.
I'm telling you, you combine that with, I told you about the glove, and you talk about, you know, when he was trying that glove. I was watching that part of the trial, I remember. He's trying to put the glove on, and I'm like, this motherfucker is trying to fucking block his hand from going in the glove. I've done that, and I could see it.
Yeah, and then you know how he turned around and showed the jury and everybody he couldn't get it on.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm like,
you could act.
He's an actor. Know? He was in movies. Kiss my ass. This guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Now, do you think he is guilty or not guilty?
Well, listen, I just heard this shit just like you did.
Right. I always thought he was guilty.
I always thought he was guilty. I couldn't understand why he wouldn't be guilty. He used to whoop her ass, and then she left him and was fucking somebody else, and he went over there.
I'll tell you some shit now since it's like all past and stuff. I told you that, you know, a good buddy of mine that I went to college with was a federal lawyer out there.
Right.
And when they told me I was going to get subpoenaed, when Bill McKenna and those guys told me I was going to get subpoenaed, possibly to go on trial and stuff, I had hired, you know, or asked him. He wasn't even hired. I asked him. He said, yeah, sure, you know, I'll represent you. And he was saying that there was rumors going around there that it might have been Columbia drug ring and stuff, because you know they were all big drug users.
Big coke heads.
Yeah, yeah. And that it was a drug deal gone bad, that O.J. Maya owed some money, and that Nicole and Ron were made an example in front of OJ and said, next will be the other people in your family if you don't, you know, get the money and pay us like you're supposed to pay us. You know, so that could be a factor in there too. You know, there's a lot of things in that trial and the things that happened, I think, that were being withheld from being put in court.
Well, here's a problem. Here's one of my problems with the theory that it was a drug kind of cartel, kind of Steven Seagal shit. Okay, the fact that OJ found himself in the yard with blood on his shirt and his heart beating like hell. If somebody knocked your ass out, let's say the cartel came up behind him, knocked him out, dragged him out to the yard, he wakes up, your heart's not going to be pounding like that.
Right.
Number one. Okay, number two, he was getting pretty mad at Ron Goldman with his little karate shit.
Yeah.
So he's like, I cannot believe, motherfucker, I will kick your ass, I will knock your ass out. Can you believe, he's like, we're not going anywhere. You think you tough motherfucker? show me how tough you are, bitch. I mean, he probably said, he blacked out. He's like, this little piece of shit is trying to fuck with the Jews. I'm going to show him. So he beats his ass to death, probably, then stabs him. Then Nicole is trying to stop him from doing that, and he fucking beats her ass till it kills her. And then he, completely in a rage blackout, then, you know, Charlie drags him out, and then he ends up in the yard. He regains his sort of... you know, he becomes aware again of what's been going on. He's like, oh my God, what's going on? Something went horribly wrong. What happened?
You never heard about them getting drug tested?
No.
When you gotten drug tested or something like that, if they were known drug users, you know, you never hear anything about any blood test for drug usage. Who knows? OJ might have been... just got done doing some coke.
I mean, you know what they all did. Coke
went into
back
a coke enraged frenzy.
And that's, you know, that's very possible.
That's why he blacked out.
I can see why, though, a big black man like OJ, who had all the power in the world, would go in such a rage when it involves his white girlfriend. Because there's a lot, and his wife, rather. Because there's a lot of stuff there that you gotta look at to get a full understanding of the condition that OJ must have been in when he was there. So it's very plausible to me that he would have blacked the fuck out. Let me tell you about this other last excerpt before we go. Another part of the book. It's about the white Bronco chase. AC drove another half mile or so and pulled into an orange grove where no one could spot us, not even from the sky. He got out to take a leak, and the moment he left the Bronco, I reached for my grip. I unzipped it and pulled out the Magnum. I was in tremendous pain, and I saw nothing but more pain ahead of me, and I decided to end it. I realized I can make this stop. One shot to the fucking head, and it's over.